I'm always on the outlook and always looking around for unique federal agencies, and I found one that's in the studio today. They're called the Inter-American Foundation, and it doesn't sound like a federal agency, but it is in the federal agency, and we're going to talk about their mission and what they do. I have about, well, right now, I got about three different officials from the Inter-American Foundation. I think we're going to have a fourth one joining us in a little while, but I'm going to have them introduce themselves, and starting off with Linda, and then going over to the right, and tell us what you do, and then tell us, then Linda, we're going to come back and talk about what your agency does. So, Linda, start us off.
Okay, sure, Derek. Hi, I'm Linda.
And thank you for coming.
Well, you're very welcome, and we're very pleased to be here. Hi, I'm Linda Colco. I am the Vice President for Operations for the Inter-American Foundation, which means I manage the operations of the place. Make sure the trains run on time, and we have electricity every day, and our computers work.
All right. Well, your email was working, so I guess you're doing a good job.
We're doing okay. Thank you.
Paula. Hi, I'm Paula Durbin, and I manage the publications and fellowships for the Inter-American Foundation.
Outstanding, outstanding.
Hi, I'm Mark Caicedo. I've been with the foundation since 1994. I've worked with the fellowship program, and currently I work in the publications office as a photo editor.
Okay, outstanding, outstanding. Why don't you guys jump in and talk to us about what is the agency and what do you guys do? I mean, people hear, you know, Inter-American Foundation, and it sounds like almost either like a philanthropy type place or a place that gives out a lot of money or grants or everything else, but you guys are an independent federal agency. One, talk to us about what it means to be an independent federal agency, and then two, what is you guys' mission?
Yes, we are an we're an independent agency of the federal government, which means we are governed by a bipartisan board appointed by the President of the United States and, of course, confirmed by the Senate. We are not part of the State Department. We are not part of USAID. We were founded in 1969, so we're celebrating our 40th anniversary. Wow. Okay. So it's a real honor to be on your show, Derek. Hey. So that's great.
Perfect timing.
I think what's also very important, when we were founded in 1969, we were set up to be an alternative to traditional government-to-government aid programs. In other words, instead of giving our aid to other government agencies, we give them directly to Latin American and Caribbean organizations. And, of course, at the time when we were established back in 69, that was very controversial. And really, what do you mean you can give money to Latin American organizations or to Caribbean groups? It should go through U.S. nonprofits or should go to the government. But we said, no, we believe that there are viable organizations, local organizations throughout the region, and that's how we want to give our grants, and we are a grant-making organization.
You know, you mentioned something interesting because you said, hey, listen, I'm not USAID. You know, our agency is not USAID. We're not State Department. We're not necessarily even affiliate with them. You know, people will ask a question, why? We're not necessarily affiliate. You probably work with them on some things,
but
why such a different agency? Why a whole different agency pulled out to do this mission?
Okay. Well, you have to look. I mean, aid, obviously USAID is a critically important part of the federal government, and they are the largest aid program, obviously, of the U.S. government. So we were set up to be small, experimental, to be able to try different things. And I think that's been very important. And because we have been so successful, they established a sister agency, the African Development Foundation, about 15 years after us.
And we've had them on the show, too.
Oh, great. Yeah. Yes. My good friend Lloyd Pearson, probably,
right.
and some other buddies of mine. Yes. So I think that was what was important, was just to be different. But again, we're significantly smaller than AID. Our annual budget's about $30 million, which would be the size of an AID grant. So
sure.
That makes us different.
You know, I wanted to walk through this mission because, you know, there were some interesting things. And you guys were established or even worked with the Foreign Assistance Act of 1969. Mm-hmm. Break that act down and then kind of walk us through the mission. Strengthen the bonds of friendship and understanding among, you know, people of this hemisphere of, you know, kind of inter-American area. What does that mean? And then walk through both of those for me.
Okay, great. Okay, strengthen the bonds of friendship. I think that's the whole point of us working people to people. In other words, our grants go to local community groups. We don't have to go through the Minister of Foreign Affairs, et cetera. So I think by that way,
it's direct.
It's direct. Okay. And the other thing that's important is our foundation representatives, all federal employees based in Northern Virginia, we are based in Northern Virginia, travel to the region and travel to the countries and to these communities at least 3-4 times a year and visit with the groups. And so they get to know us as Americans, as individual Americans. Many of us who work at the Inter-American Foundation and many of the founders, the original staff of the Inter-American Foundation, were Peace Corps volunteers. I was a Peace Corps volunteer in Belize many years ago. Mark was a volunteer in Honduras. Yes.
Okay.
And there are several other colleagues of ours that were Peace Corps volunteers. So we come from that same sort of people-to-people, I think, mission, which is, I know, part of what the Peace Corps is.
Sure. In terms of your reach in all the countries or all the different areas, I mean, what is your reach? What areas are you impacting, you know, with your coverage when you're giving money to the local communities? What are the different countries or communities?
Well, we have provided grants pretty much to every country throughout the region, with the exception of Cuba, obviously, since we don't have relations with Cuba. But I think we've been pretty much everywhere, and I know it's in our annual report, but I can't say every single island in the Caribbean, for example, but we have had grants pretty much everywhere. What we're also very proud of is we're able to work in countries such as Bolivia and Honduras, even after, you know, there was this coup in Honduras. Sure. Our grant program continued. We've worked in Haiti through very difficult times. We worked in El Salvador and Nicaragua during the civil wars there. Again, because it is people-to-people aid, we don't have to go through some government ministry in those countries.
Sure. You mentioned Haiti, and any of you guys jump on in. You mentioned Haiti. I mean, we recently had this recent earthquake and everything else. I mean, how has the work you're doing? I know other agencies have been down on the ground, but how has the work you guys have been doing? Was it affected, or, you know, are you guys, you know, going back and trying to put some more money into the area? What's going on?
Well, we've been able to check in with our grantees. Most of them are okay. A few of them have lost some of our beneficiaries, unfortunately, were killed. We had a sad personal situation where our auditor lost his daughter, and then he died a few weeks later, which is one of many tragedies. Wow. Organizations we work with, we are learning about people dying, but our groups have been in pretty good shape. We've also been providing support through some of our Dominican grantees that work in Haiti, that are Dominican Haitians that live in the Dominican Republic, and are providing some training and support in the earthquake relief and recovery. We also, it's interesting, our annual report that we shared with you, the cover has this wonderful group of young Haitian filmmakers, and they were part of the filming of the new We Are the World video.
So
we're very pleased with that, and we've been providing them with support. And we're looking at what we can do, again, talking to our grantees, the long-term recovery. We're going to be more involved in the long-term recovery.
We
were involved after Hurricane Mitch. There have been several horrible hurricanes, et cetera. And there are earthquakes and major tremors throughout the region all the time. And we've been involved a lot in recovery, generally 6 months later, when a lot of the aid groups are gone.
You're still there.
But we're still there working with the local organizations.
Do you have actual members of your team who are on the ground? I mean, after maybe kind of doing these long-term assessments and saying, you know, after the emergency aid is down and people are kind of stabilized a little bit more, are your people on the ground working with the people hand in hand?
Well, we have local contractors, Haitian contractors that have been down there that are working with things. And then our foundation representative is traveling to the Dominican Republic this week and will be going to Haiti overland from the Dominican Republic to meet with our grantees.
Sure.
But what also makes us different from AID and State Department, I think is important, is we do not have American staff stationed overseas.
Okay.
Our staff are based here in the United States. Again, it's more cost effective, and I think it's a bit of an arm's length, which we think is important because we support the ideas and initiatives of the Latin American and Caribbean organizations. We're not involved in the day-to-day management of those grants, which we think is important.
So really, your whole mission is to find somebody who's on the ground who you can trust.
Yes.
And then from there, provide them the resources, the money, and things like that to distribute out to those who they think are going to be the best, you know, self-help programs or development-type programs. And try not necessarily put the footprint of the United States down this. I mean, of course, they know that we're helping.
Yeah, they know it's
but
US.
But it's not a heavy hand.
It's U.S. government funds. People know that. It's from the U.S. government.
But it was not necessarily the heavy hand where you guys are on the ground.
Right.
Gotcha. With this supporting self-help efforts for individual development and part of your mission, what does that entail?
Well, I think what's important to us is that grantees have to also invest in the project that they propose to us. There is cash counterpart, but there's often what we call in-kind counterpart, which may mean that the beneficiaries are providing the labor. It may mean, and also when we talk about counterpart, it can be that the Ministry of Agriculture is providing some technical assistance, or the grantee organization has some land available to use to build on the training center, and we may be providing the materials for the training center. Also, it's critically important that the beneficiaries of the grants are involved in the design and implementation of the grant. Absolutely. We do not prescribe what the grant should be. we respond to their ideas and initiatives.
Okay. And we're going to talk more about this grant process, because it sounds like it's a real unique kind of interesting process to go through. With the grant process, just kind of giving it a taste of it before we go into it for the second segment, do you guys review this? I mean, when do the grants come into you, these ideas, and you guys have a committee that reviews this?
Well, what happens is we put out on our website, there's an annual call for proposals. Okay. There is just the funding, basic funding criteria. And that would mean, again, some of the things I just said about the grantees and beneficiaries need to be engaged in the design. They have to be involved in the design and implementation. There has to be counterpart support. There cannot be any proselytizing. You know, this is all, you know, this U.S. government separation of church and state, et cetera. And therefore, we get all these interesting proposals and we look to see, does it look feasible, et cetera. They come into the foundation, and the foundation representatives, we have field representatives for the countries where we work. They review them initially, and they get other colleagues to review them also. If it looks it looks viable, then they go and visit them in the field, and then they present them at the foundation, and it goes through a review process at the foundation.
You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're talking about the Inter-American Foundation. I've got several staff members in the studio with me, and then one that just came in. We're going to introduce him on the next segment. But we're talking about them, what they do, their mission. We're going to talk about in the next segment about their grants, some of the fellowships and publications. And then later on in the show, we're going to talk about the success stories that this agency has had in dealing with the Caribbean and areas, Latin America, and all the other areas that they have impact on. You listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The internet, it's indispensable. Without it, how else would we perform crucial functions like shoe shopping, watching videos of a cat playing the piano, emailing inspirational anecdotes to our 1,000 closest friends? But despite these awesome utilizations of information technology, at Kaiser Permanente, we found some better uses. Like being able to securely manage your own health online 24/7, emailing your doctor's office, checking most test results, reviewing meds, making routine appointments, not to mention a vital digital connection between you, your doctor, and everyone on your team. Could it be that making total health smarter, more efficient, and more convenient is the very sort of thing for which the internet was intended? Maybe, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't fit in a cat video now and then. We're Kaiser Permanente, and we want you to live well, laugh well, and thrive. Learn more at kp.org/thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
The Trusted Advisor Series is provided by Knowledge Consulting Group, KCG, the federal government's trusted advisor for cybersecurity services.
The White House released a summary of the Bush administration's comprehensive national cybersecurity initiative. The Obama administration highlighted the release of the CNCI, a component of his administration's cyberspace policy review, as an example of its commitment to transparency and the importance of partnership among government, industry, and the American public for effective cybersecurity.
Who does your agency trust to protect its critical infrastructure against the next cyber attack? At KCG, cybersecurity is what they do. Federal agencies turn to KCG to protect their enterprise against cyber attacks while maintaining regulatory compliance and improving the organization's security posture and situational awareness. To learn how KCG's team of cleared cybersecurity experts can become your agency's trusted advisor, visit the Trusted Advisor Report on federalnewsradio.com or on the web at knowledgecg.com.
Here's to the believers, the risk takers, the visionaries, the entrepreneurs who put it all on the line to build and run their own businesses. At AT&T, we know something about that. Our company started out in a small lab with not much more than a dream. And today, we know it's small businesses that can create the jobs America needs. That's why AT&T is investing billions to upgrade and build out our wired and wireless networks, making them faster, smarter, and more secure, connecting small businesses to markets across the country and around the world. We invest now because we know it will pay off with new jobs, new growth from a new generation, putting their belief in the future on the line. Now is the time for investment and innovation. The future is waiting, and the future has always been our business. AT&T.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I should say welcome back because we're on the second segment. We're talking about the Inter-American Foundation today as a unique agency. It's got a unique mission. And we talked about the mission in the beginning of the segment. we've got joining us a new colleague, a new staff member, not necessarily a new staff member, but new into the studio. We've got another colleague who joined in to talk about the mission of IAF. Introduce yourself.
My name is Eduardo Rodriguez Frias. I've been with the Inter-American Foundation for about 9 years. I work in the public relations office, but I have served in several different functions over the years. Yeah.
And it sounds like you guys got a real kind of family. I mean, from what I'm just...
Well, it's your classic family. We'll just say that.
A little argument, I mean, love, hate relationship.
Well, there's only 47. I mean, I think it's important, Derek, as federal agencies go, we only have 47 employees. So that is small.
That is small. Yeah. That is small. Well, that's good. And a lot of people, like, I mean, from hearing you guys, a lot of people have been with the agency for quite some time.
Yeah,
I mean,
maybe, you know, 18 years.
Really? And you 10 years, 9 years, and everything else. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Well, let's keep on talking about the mission, because the another part, stimulate and assist effective and wider participation with people in the development of process. I mean, what does that mean?
Yeah, I think what's really important here when we say that wider participation, so we focus on a lot of the excluded groups. And what I want to explain what we mean by that is, for example, African descendants, indigenous, persons with disabilities, women and youth. And when I'm talking about African descendants, I'm not just talking the people of the Caribbean or the Afro-Brazilians. We're also talking about the fact that one third of the population south of the border is of African descent and more than 50% of the poverty. So we work with people of African descent in Colombia, in Ecuador, in Honduras, in Nicaragua.
Uruguay.
Uruguay. Thank you, Paula. And also in Argentina. I think that's important. Talking about indigenous. Yes, we work with indigenous communities in Guatemala, in Mexico, but also in Argentina, in Paraguay, obviously in Bolivia, Ecuador, and I think, yes, in Venezuela. I could keep going.
El Salvador.
El Salvador. I think it's important. And also we've had great success working with persons with disabilities. I'd like Eduardo to give you a quick update. He's our expert on in that.
Go ahead,
area.
Eduardo.
Yeah, I've been working on the area of people with disabilities since about 2002. At the time, the IAF had a decent track record working with them, but right at the point where I was researching this issue, we only had one project. And as Linda explained, we worked through an open call for proposals, so our ability to have good projects with any of the groups that she mentioned is based on us being able to get proposals. So what I started doing was going out to meetings and conferences related to people with disabilities and letting them know that this funding opportunity was available and encouraging them to apply for grants. A few years later, about 7% of our budget went to persons with disabilities for a specific fiscal year. And we're averaging about 5% these days. So we have a good track record working with this community, which is often excluded from the development process. A lot of the foreign aid that goes USAID and State Department, they received some criticism a few years back because we would put up new buildings after an earthquake or a hurricane.
Yeah.
And they were not accessible to people with disabilities. If we were building them here in America, we would make sure that
right.
was. So it's a very challenging area.
And because you're working in regions where there is no ADA, there is no act that deals with disabilities, but you guys have been on the forefront of kind of thinking about, listen, I mean, there are people who are in these countries who have been devastated, who are walking around, who are in wheelchairs, who are in crutches and everything else, and they need access just like anybody else.
Yeah. And USAID and State Department have actually also made big improvements in that area over the last few years.
Yeah. That's a good push, though.
Yeah. Derek, I'd like Paula to talk a little bit about this area also, because, yes, we give grants, but we also do publish a journal and, of course, an annual report and a lot of material.
You gave me a lot of reading material for tonight.
Exactly. But I think and we published a journal just on with a theme on African descendants, and I'd like Paula to talk a little bit about that.
Paula, please.
Yeah, our 2007 journal was on African descendants and development, Afro-Latins and development.
Sure.
And it turned out to be one of our most popular journals, and we had to reprint the Spanish version several times to keep up with the demand. We're just now running out of it. You can access it at www.iaf.gov.
Okay.
Publications Journal 2007.
Sure. Is it like downloadable in a PDF document?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Good. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about what's in it. What's in the journal?
Well,
what will people get from it?
We looked at African descendants in various countries, Ecuador, Panama, Uruguay, Paraguay, where you don't even think there yes. might be any. Argentina, where you don't even think there might be yes. any. Was that it? Were there more? There were some yeah. books reviewed on the new law in Colombia as it applied to them. And it was really a learning experience for me to do this journal, because I found out a lot about each country's situation. Sure. Was very, very different.
That's right.
The situation
That's
right. of the African descendants in each country.
You can't just
very,
take
very
a
different.
Region and just think
no,
it's all
you,
the
no,
same.
You can't. You yeah. can't. And I had to explain, for example, in Panama, you have two distinct categories of African descendants, and this all comes into play. So it was a very interesting edition of our journal and very popular.
With the journal, are you guys providing kind of both this background on the descendants and, you know, maybe, you know, kind of the unique dynamics of each country, but are you also kind of providing kind of like solutions or certain things that people can think about in terms of implementing a development program in those areas?
Well, we try to show where things are, and we have a wonderful, wonderful introductory article by Bob Cottrell, who teaches at George Washington University sure. in the law school, who looks at generally where African descendants are now.
Okay.
And just an excellent, excellent article. I would really recommend it to your listeners.
Well, we're going to take a look at the publications. I want to talk about them because I think you guys got several different publications. Are these guys, your publications, are you producing annual where every couple years you're putting out major reports, or what's going on?
We turn out the journal yearly.
Okay.
And we also turn out our annual report annually.
Sure.
The annual report is kind of a micro, it has vignettes of what we're funding
yeah.
in that particular
okay.
year.
Okay.
And, we try to appeal to the reader. We try to focus on people.
And educate people about what's going
yes.
on out there.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds
yes.
like this may be some good material for like NGOs
Absolutely.
And nonprofits
yeah.
who are either thinking about going into these regions or already working in these regions
right.
as well.
Yes.
Would
yes.
you say
I mean,
that?
I would say our mailing list, and again, Paul and Mark can chime in on this, is universities. A lot of professors
yes.
use our articles as case studies in their
okay.
classes. Our grantees and other local NGOs use them as interesting, you know, stories about what is going on in grassroots development. And the authors of the articles are an interesting mix. Some of them are current staff writing about grants that, you know, and what's happened to these grantee organizations through the years. Some are former staff or other development,
sure.
you know, professionals throughout
sure.
the region. And as Paula had mentioned, we have book reviews on some of the latest development, books on development. That
so if you've got a person who has a good article who may even be outside of your agency.
Absolutely. We can
and
contract.
You can say you can put them on in and put yeah. them into the journal.
Yes.
I would just like to point
ahead,
out
Mark.
Also, because we are a small agency, we can't fund all these big projects all over the place. So the journal and the annual review are a good way to reach a wider audience than just, you know, half a dozen projects in a particular country. And as Linda pointed out, it goes to universities, right. other NGOs, development right. practitioners, students. So we reach a much wider audience through our publication.
Outstanding. You know, I want to talk about the grant project. And one other thing I want to bring into place, because part of your mission is the establishment of democratic institutions, you know, both private, governmental, and in these sovereign countries. I mean, are you helping to promote democracy in certain areas? And then also, let's swing into the grant process as you guys are doing this work. How does that work?
Okay, well, quickly, I think the whole point of supporting organizations and making sure, as I had mentioned earlier, that the beneficiaries are engaged in the development implementation means we're strengthening just the basic democratic practices that we really take for granted here.
Sure.
I happen to live in Tacoma Park, Maryland, and,
right.
you know, we have, I think, 33 community associations in a town of 13,000 people or something. And so local democracy and local community organizations is just what we live and breathe here. Well, we help support those types of organizations throughout the region to help them to be able to then negotiate with their local mayors. Now, you need to understand, in Latin America, the mayors have just been elected. That is a new phenomenon in many countries in
sure.
Latin America. Not so much the Caribbean democracy is a lot stronger because of, you know, the English heritage.
Right.
Certainly the English-speaking Caribbean. Anyway, so what our point is a lot of the groups we work with, we help them then to be able, part of it is to training in what is democracy, what is, You know, how do you present a good proposal to, and how do you negotiate with your local mayor? So that's how we look at participation and strengthening democracy.
You mentioned a good point because, you know, in a lot of these areas, like you said, democracy and elections and all these other things are kind of new concepts. And,
right.
and all this stuff is kind of just unfolding over the past yeah. few years or so. Are you seeing people who are gravitating towards you and saying, we like what you're doing? Or are you seeing pushback from maybe those who are the old, you know, the old guard and don't necessarily want to bring in these development initiatives? I mean, what? Give me a few seconds on that. And what has been the take? I mean, are people loving what you do, or are they fighting it?
Well, I think what's interesting to see is, again, in let's take Bolivia, for example, where the U.S. government and the government of Bolivia have had an interesting relations. I think again, but because the new president Evo Morales, who was just reelected, knows our organizations, knows a lot of the leaders of our organizations. He's pretty much let us know we support what you're doing, and you can continue to work in Bolivia. While there's been some tough negotiations with the U.S. government on other areas such
sure.
as drug eradication.
Sure.
That's I want to respect our government. That's a tough
yes,
situation,
yeah, yeah.
And that's just one simple example. But I think there are many where, again, it's not going to go back.
Right.
I mean, democracy is there. There's going to be challenges. There'll always be challenges to democracy. But at the local level, it's important. Mayors realize. Just like in this country, if you want to get reelected, you have to have those constituent
yeah,
services,
sure.
you know, and we see that.
Right.
And they're seeing that more and more. We work also with the Florida International University has been sponsoring a mayor's conference, Inter-American Mayor's Conference for, I think it's up to 12 or 13 years now. And we bring up local mayors and our and NGOs that we have and other grantee organizations that have been working with the mayors and show examples of how public-private partnerships can be very, very successful. A lot on recycling, because waste management, as you can appreciate,
yeah,
Derek's a problem
sure.
everywhere.
Very much so.
Eduardo was sponsored panels on, again, with persons with disabilities, an interesting mm-hmm. program there. We've been supporting, we're happy to say there are a lot of mayors now of African descent in various cities throughout the region, and we've been working with them. They're trying to build up tourism in their country.
Outstanding. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to talk more about the Inter-American Foundation, IAF, and all the interesting stuff. This is interesting thing, and we got a lot to cover over the next couple of segments, and we're probably going to have them come on back on another show because there's so much to cover. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be talking more about IAF and the great things they do after this break. You're listening to Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The SATCOM report is brought to you by Hughes, the global leader in broadband satellite networks and services. Here is Tony Bardo from Hughes.
When winter storms forced D.C.-based federal agencies to close, was your agency able to benefit from a robust telework program? Federal telework programs save money, reduce greenhouse emissions, and improve continuity of operations planning. Yet only about 5% of the federal workforce teleworks. Agency site IT funding and security as key barriers to participating in telework programs. Hughes has the answer, managed network services. With a managed network services approach, a single provider can fully integrate an agency's network vendors and all aspects of service, maintenance, billing, saving money, enhancing network security, as well as improving the quality and reliability of service.
Visit today's complete SATCOM report on federalnewsradio.com. Visit Hughes on the web at government.hughes.com or call 800-498-4909.
The best person to make decisions regarding your estate is you. Without an effective estate plan, do you know who's going to make those decisions? The government. A will is only part of the puzzle. At Zell Law, our estate planning lawyers take the time to understand your goals and then create a customized plan that ensures your family will realize your dreams of wealth and freedom. Join me, Wayne Zell, Saturdays at 7:30 a.m. for Blueprint for Wealth on Federal News Radio.
Listen next week for a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, conversation with authors exploring ideas on improving government effectiveness. Now that competitive analytics and business intelligence techniques are mainstream, to what extent can government use these techniques to enhance its own performance? Explore this and the use of business analytics with special guest Tom Davenport, distinguished professor in information technology and management at Babson College, and co-author of Competing on Analytics, The New Science of Winning. Join host Michael Keegan next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we're talking about a really unique and really, really interesting and really, really important federal agency called the Inter-American Foundation. foundation may sound like they, you know, are a NGO or a foundation, a philanthropic organization, but they're not. They're an actual independent federal agency doing some interesting work in the Caribbean, Latin America, and other areas. And we've been talking about your mission. We've been talking about some of the publications you have. But you guys, one of the most important things you do is give out grants to these different communities, giving out money to help these people start various programs that are going to help people individually, community-wide, and everything else. Talk to me about the grant process. I mean, when you put out certain things, what kind of grants can people apply to? How much money can people receive? I mean, how is it determined?
Okay, sure. Again, as we mentioned a little bit earlier, we put out a call for proposals on our website. Groups from Latin America and the Caribbean can submit a grant proposal any time of the year. We don't have a deadline. I think what's important is, again, as I mentioned earlier, is we respond to the ideas and initiatives of the Latin American and Caribbean organizations. We do not tell you you have to work in particular sectors. We are looking for feasible projects that promote self-help, grassroots development. Our average grant size is about $200,000, but we do have grants as small as $35,000. We call those planning grants, and often that may be to provide some resources to a group to do strategic planning exercise, and then based on that, they will then apply for a larger grant from us. And we even have grants of, I think, up to $300,000 or $400,000. But again, the average grant size is about $200,000, and they're generally for about a three-year period.
And in those communities where the dollar is strong, I mean, those communities, they're pretty depressed economy. So $300,000 in terms of American dollars goes a long way.
Yeah, that's a good amount of money. And again, sure, what we mentioned earlier, which is critical, the groups have to also invest in kind. It might be land, it might be staff time, it might be volunteer labor, and also some cash. So that therefore the whole project itself, maybe the Inter-American Foundation puts in $200,000, but the in-kind and cash support that the grantee is bringing in may add another $200,000 to the grant. And it's generally, for every dollar we put in, the grantee puts in about $1.50.
Sure. Now, you just mentioned something interesting, where you have a rolling, kind of a rolling deadline or something like that, where people can apply anytime. Right. So what I'm hearing is that if a person has an interesting idea, I mean, you guys seem like you may be open to, if somebody says, you know what, our community needs this, and you hadn't thought of it before already, you're willing to listen to these ideas and maybe possibly fund it.
Yes. I mean, that's it. If they present something that appears feasible, again, as I mentioned, the field representative for that country does an initial review and then asks colleagues to review it, so they get some feedback. And then if they get, I think it's an A and B grade, you know, we grade them, and then the field rep will go visit the group, get to see on the ground what's going on, check some references, and see if this really does look like a viable organization, sure, and their idea looks like it may be worthwhile. But we also make it clear to our grantees that they also have to continue to be looking at what is going to be sustainable. We're not there forever.
Right.
Though, on the other hand, I think it's important. We have found that often it's helpful to give them maybe a supplemental grant after the end of their 2 or 3 years to help them to continue, maybe to expand in another part of the region, et cetera, or also it would just help them maybe really truly become sustainable. So sometimes we have worked with groups for 7-8 years.
Okay.
That's been worthwhile because therefore then this activity, this process continues. And when we get into the success stories, we'll be able to tell
you
a little bit more.
Sure. So when they receive a grant, I mean, are these grants, I mean, you're saying, listen, you know, 2 to 3 year grant, do they receive all the money up front, or it's kind of broken up into various pieces in terms of a project? You guys have certain things you have to accomplish, then you get this amount of money.
Okay. Yes. I mean, we monitor our grants. Every grant is audited, receives a financial audit once a year. Okay. And we also have social science analysts who go out and verify the results of the grants. You know, we are a federal agency. We do have to provide, there's the Government Performance and Results Act, and so we do have to provide results of our grants. And so therefore, we have the social science analysts that go out and do that. Those are local contractors also. And then I think what's also important is there are reporting requirements.
Sure.
And so we disperse funds as needed, and so therefore, they generally get maybe a third, the first disbursement. If they meet the reporting requirements, they meet the things, their audit is good, then they will get their second disbursement, et cetera. So we work closely with the grantees on what's appropriate there.
With this whole process in terms of people receiving grant monies and everything else, as they go along, I mean, are you guys working with established organizations, or are you guys working, somebody could come with a brand new idea and say, listen, I'm going to establish an organization with your with these monies and do A, B, C, and D. I mean, how does that go?
Groups generally have their legal status.
Okay.
And some of these smaller grants, like I had mentioned, like the plans we call the planning of 35,000, it may be with a group that is just beginning to get that, but they still have to have some sort of a track record.
Okay.
We do work with some foundations where we have where we call these things that are sort of like in-country funds, where we might be funding very incipient groups, but they would be getting $5,000 or $10,000, and that might be so that they can get the legal status and maybe start a small project.
Sure. And for those who apply for grants, as people are hearing about this, one, how do you get the information out? I mean, are you guys in public affairs? Are you guys working in communities and kind of getting the information out to various government leaders or community leaders in those countries? I mean, how do they find out about this grant process? Maybe with the internet now, it's maybe easier, but how do they find out about it? And then what's the review process? I mean, are you guys sitting in a committee, board of directors? I mean, how do people, you know, get their grants reviewed? Give us an insight in that.
Okay, well, I think the Inter-American Foundation is very well known throughout Latin America and the Caribbean, much more so than here. That helps. So I think a lot of it is word of mouth, but it's also our field representatives and the local contractors get the word out in the communities.
Really?
And when we're working in countries where maybe we haven't worked as broadly, then we might even put ads in the paper.
Okay.
And that we'll have a session, a town hall meeting to talk about how to apply for grants to the Inter-American Foundation.
For 40 years, you got a track record now.
We have a track record.
So people know who you are.
People know us, but I think it's also important we do where we need to in areas, we will do town hall meetings, I guess, is the easiest way to describe them.
Okay. Yeah. Outstanding.
Yeah.
Take me inside the grant process.
Okay, quickly. When the proposals come in, there's the initial paper review, which would be the field representative and a couple of his or her colleagues. Then there's the field visit, if it looks viable. We get about 600 or 700 proposals a year, and we only fund 70 to 80 a year.
Okay.
So we're pretty competitive. Then the person comes back. There is a meeting with the various offices where the field representative presents, this is the proposal, this is what I think is viable, this is the budget, this is what I've negotiated. And then it goes through a review process, obviously through management. All of our grants are vetted by the U.S. Embassy to make sure that we are not funding terrorist groups, and also to make sure that whatever the goals and objectives of the organization are certainly complement U.S. foreign policy,
which is
not hard to do, so that's fine. And then, of course, as with all federal grants, we send public statements to Congress, to the important oversight committees for our agency.
Sure.
But all federal agencies do that, and that's it, yes.
With corporate outreach, you had this real interesting. I mean, what are you guys doing on the corporate outreach side? And anybody chime in? You know, cause Linda, you got the hose.
I know, I keep blabbing, so that's fine.
But on corporate outreach, I mean, what does that mean? Are you guys, you know, looking for partners who are in these countries working, maybe multinational firms who are also trying to do some good stuff in these areas?
Yeah, well, I guess I'm happy to start. Or you want to say something?
Yeah, I'll just say a few sentences, and then I'll turn it over to Linda, who has been in more contact with these organizations than I have. In 2002, the IAF met with 12 corporate foundations from Latin American countries and formed a network, which in shorthand is called Red America. The name is much longer, but we call it Red America.
Sure.
And since then, it has grown to 68 members. The members work in three ways. They can partner with us, which some of them have, and we commit an amount of money, and they have to double that amount.
Okay.
They commit double that amount and assume the administrative expenses. More recently, the members have begun to work together by country to form like a sort of mini nets by country and raise money for grassroots development. All of them are committed to supporting grassroots development.
Okay.
And even more recently, some of the members have approached the big donors like the IDB and the Spanish CODESPA and have gotten funds from those organizations. So that's the sure. main thrust of our corporate outreach.
Are these corporations from all sectors? I mean, are they you know, the ones that we hear, maybe energy, or I mean, what sectors are they coming from?
Some, yeah, energy, construction's a big one. I think we've got bananas, I mean, et cetera. I think it's everything.
Sure. Agriculture type agriculture, and everything else.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty much everything.
People who see the potential of these indigenous populations and seeing the potential of development in these areas.
Yes. Mm-hmm. What I think has been interesting, I've had several jobs at the foundation, and one was external affairs, where we were working and trying to engage the U.S. corporate sector. And that has been challenging for us. Where we have had some success was with the Levi Strauss Foundation. And that's because if you looked at the goals and the mission of the Levi Strauss Foundation, it's very similar to ours. And that was an interesting, talk a little bit about that, because I think it's an interesting collaboration. The Levi Strauss Foundation would approach us and say, we've got plants in Colombia and Uruguay. We've got plants in several states in Mexico. And if you're working in those particular states in Mexico or in these regions in Uruguay, maybe we can work together. What are you doing in those areas? And our interest is women, youth, indigenous. Well, wow, that's just what we do. So we would send them, these are some of the groups we're interested in Puebla, Mexico. What do you think? And they would say, great, we'll give you $20,000 towards that grant. And so we got some interesting, we've done some interesting co-funding with the Levi Strauss Foundation. But we found it's just easier to work with the Latin American private foundations and corporate foundations because they're in the countries for the long haul.
Sure.
So it just makes sense. And it's been the energy sector, it's been the mining sector, agriculture, it's been pretty much the gamut. And and as Paula mentioned, we worked with these 12 corporate foundations. They had been organizations and foundations that we had been working with for years in this co-funding of these small grants, $5,000-$10,000 size grants. And now they wanted to build this network with us. We helped facilitate a $4.7 million grant from the Inter-American Development Bank, as Paula had mentioned. Mm-hmm. And what I think is also interesting is they're training their staff to move from philanthropy to supporting sustainable grassroots development.
Okay.
And that we're very, very pleased. And they have an interesting online course that's sponsored by the Monterey Tech of Mexico, which is one of the top technical institutes in the region, which has a big, large distance learning program throughout the region. And so people can take this online course on grassroots development techniques. And I've met some of the people that have taken the course, and they said it's been extremely helpful for them to understand. Because these companies are very hands-on, and they want to be involved in the day-to-day management of these little grants, and we're trying to get them to move that. Let the organizations themselves manage the resources, and they're going to learn.
You hear the excitement in the voices. We're talking about the Inter-American Foundation, and it's a great, what you guys are doing is great in the community and great in these countries. Just say your name real quick, and then just tell them where they can find all this information about the agency.
Well, the information for the agency is available on our webpage. It's www.iaf.gov.
And you are?
And my name is Eduardo Rodriguez Frias.
And then Linda.
Linda Colco.
Paula Durbin.
Mark Caicedo. And I just wanted to mention, as in regarding the fellowships, there is a link to on our website, iaf.gov. Specifically for fellowship applications.
Outstanding. Great. Thank you for coming in and talking about this on Fed Access. Great agency. We'll probably definitely have to have you come back because there's so much we haven't covered today and so many other success stories. But thank you for coming on Fed Access.
Thank you. Thanks.